is jazz. Big Charlie Brown Christmas vibes here.
You know what?
Do you like that album?
Now that's the question.
No. Oh, wow.
I do,
bad
however.
Bad take.
I do, however, like the stand-up bass as a rule. So, like...
But you don't like jazz? That's where the stand-up bass shines.
No, the stand-up bass shines in rock. String instruments were made for rock music, as demonstrated by Glycerine. And the raconteurs use a stand-up bass, and they rock.
Jack White's lesser accomplishments, the raconteurs. I'm a big raconteurs guy. Not compared to the White Stripes.
No.
Anyways, I am digging this.
Yeah, it makes me feel like I'm on hold.
No.
On hold with an extremely classy organization.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, I wish Purolator had this hold music. I've gotten very familiar with their hold music, and I wish it was this.
I'm on hold waiting to talk to Fiona about buying diamonds.
Fiona!
No comment.
You should just run it the whole
time. Moving on! It's Jamie Dodd, it's Thomas Drantz here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. We're live from the Kintec Studio 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved, but also Dunbar Lumber is Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. Busy day for the Canucks. They played last night. They're playing again in about 3 hours' time here against the Pittsburgh Penguins. So can't do it in the first segment on Wednesdays because we do the crossover. So right now, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks. Today is November 27th. We'll start with the headlines. Canucks beat the Bruins 2-0 in Boston. So they're now 2-0 on this six-game road trip, which continues this afternoon in Pittsburgh. And it certainly wasn't a pretty effort. I think you might have the highest opinion of the game the Canucks have played that I've heard in the market anyways, but I don't think it was a poor effort.
I think my opinion of the game is that the Boston Bruins are really bad offensively.
Yes.
I think more than anything, that's my main takeaway. It's less about the Canucks. So here's the take that I'm seeing a lot that I disagree with. The Canucks were lucky.
Lankinen stole the game.
Look at the expected goals. It was a goal. The goalie stole it and the puck bounced their way. And that's why. No, the Canucks won because the Boston Bruins shot constantly at Lankinen's pads. This is a
or into the Canucks shin pads.
Yes.
And full credit to the Canucks for blocking all those shots. But
I thought the Canucks crossed that barrier for the third straight game that I'm kind of looking for, where they at least play the right way, where they start the game focused, right? Where they're not lackadaisical in terms of sticking to some of those staples or structure or whatever buzzword Rick Tocchetism you want to use, right? I thought they crossed that bar. I had concerns with their play with the puck. I think they made player deployment decisions that enhanced how negative their overall form was. But I look at that game and think the Boston Bruins are in trouble. They do not have enough offensive venom to hang with really good teams. And the Vancouver Canucks were able to contain them successfully and got a strong goaltending performance. Not a dominant, stole 2 points goaltending performance, but a really strong performance from Lankinen, who won his 10th game and recorded his second Canucks shutout. And I sort of come away from that thinking, hey, not too shabby.
Yeah, I think the point about, again, all the buzzwords, all the cliches, the identity, the effort, the structure, right? All of those things is absolutely true. And you would have loved to see them be more dangerous offensively, but they just did not have it last night. And for me, it's just the kind of game where you certainly don't want to make a habit of it, right? You string together those, or they happen more than, you know, once every few weeks, once a month kind of thing. Then you start to get pretty concerned. But it's also a talent to be able to win those games, right? To have enough different things working for you that you can get the result. And again, for the Canucks to get another win on the road, start this road trip with two in a row, put themselves in a position to really do some damage on this road trip. And again, as I said earlier, turn it from a dangerous situation into a positive for them. It's good. You got to feel good about it, even though there's obviously lots that they can improve on as well. Now, They go to a very different situation on the second half of a back-to-back playing the Pittsburgh Penguins in Pittsburgh tonight. That's a 4:30 start time. And you, of course, can hear the game here on the station. And, you know, Pittsburgh has been one of, if not the worst defensive team in the NHL this year. Tristan Jarry, who I think is going to get the start tonight, has been down in the AHL for stretches. He's really struggled, but the defense in front of them has been horrible as well. So in some ways, you know, I said after the Ottawa game, right, okay, you're going into, you played really well defensively against Ottawa before they tack on those two late goals. Then you're going to a really offensively challenged team in Boston. That's a chance for you to string together a couple of solid defensive efforts. I think they did that.
Yes.
This is a great get-right spot, even though it's second half of a back-to-back, because guess what? You just struggled immensely offensively. Well, now you get to play the Pittsburgh Penguins. Mm-hmm. And it's not as simple as that. You still have to go out and you still have to execute, but this is a good chance for them to build back some of that offensive confidence that was lacking last night.
Well, here's what I want to see, honestly, tonight. I want to see the Canucks approach this the way good teams often approach road back-to-backs. I want to see 10 killer minutes.
Yep.
At the start of the game. And I want to see the Canucks... Look, you can't guarantee that you're going to be able to build a lead in those 10 minutes, but I want to see the Canucks go full tilt, all out, try to get a one or two goal lead in the first 10 minutes. And more than that, I want to see them manage the game with an awareness of how important it is to be able to hang on to the game
to
as opposed
right.
to chase it.
Yeah.
So I want to see the first 10 minutes for me are paramount from a process standpoint. Like, I just want to see the Canucks dialed. This team hasn't started on time frequently enough. They haven't. They haven't been focused enough early in games. I want to see that focus tonight. I want to see that effort, because that's what really good teams do when playing the second leg of a back-to-back, especially against an opponent that they think they can handle, and the Canucks should think they can handle the Penguins. So I want to see the start, and I want to see it be excellent. And then from there, you know, I think you can fall back on the sort of defensive game plan that worked
stuff.
For you against both Ottawa and Boston. And that's sort of what I'm looking for tonight. That's what I'm expecting from this team tonight. You know, the Penguins are not good, but the Penguins are still dangerous if you don't have your legs.
Mm.
They can still control play. They can still score. If you take bad penalties, they can punish you, right? Like, there's still enough game breakers in that lineup. And more than that, we talk about age curves a lot on this program, but I feel like we don't spend enough time mulling over the descriptive quality of what it looks like to be on the downswing of an aging curve. And when you're talking about guys like Malkin and Carlson and Letang and Crosby to a lesser extent, you know, I think there's stages that this can look like. Like, one stage is, well, he's still great when he's healthy. This is like the like guy who's slipping in his early 30s.
Mm.
It's like, well, he's hurt right now. And you might be right. He might have the bounce back healthy season the next year. But increasingly, as you get older in the NHL, like, hits hurt harder. It becomes harder to be available every game the way that, you know, great players sometimes are. So it's like, he's still great when he's healthy, but he's healthy with increasing, like, it's increasingly rare that he's fully healthy, right? Like, that's step one. Then step two is he's still great. But
on some nights.
But he's not great every night.
Yeah.
This is like the Devontae Adams in the NFL is like the perfect example, where it's like there are still games where he dominates and you're like, wow, that's one of the best wide receivers in the world. But he's not one of the best wide receivers in the world game in, game out. Right. And that's sort of the next step. I kind of think that's where Malkin is, for example. Right. Like, I think that's where Malkin, Carlson has bigger defensive issues, and Letang are at this point. I think all those guys, they're not. They can still, on any given night, be far and away the best player on just about any sheet that McDavid or McKinnon or Matthews isn't on, but they're not going to be that consistently every night. And,
yeah.
So that means they're still dangerous night to night. They're still dangerous for a Canucks team that we'd expect to not have 100% go legs this evening.
The other thing is, you said about, okay, you really want to start the first 10 minutes of the game dialed in, and that's a situation which cries out for Quinn Hughes, but also Elias Pettersson, right? Elias Pettersson, quiet night. The whole team had a quiet night, but, you know, he certainly didn't have a major impact on the game last night in Boston. This is a chance for him. Okay, you are the best forward on the team, certainly right now while JT Miller is out. You are expected to be the leading offensive player. Go out and make your mark on the game early. Stake your team a lead. Take control of the game. Quinn Hughes, of course, a major part of that, can be a major part of that for the Canucks as well tonight in Pittsburgh. Just lineup notes for the Pittsburgh Penguins as well, looking at this one. both Matt Grizzlick and Ryan Graves, two veteran defensemen, look like they're going to be healthy scratches. Owen Pickering, the youngster, draws in, as well as Jack St. Ivany on the back end and Ryan Shea. So some lesser known names and two relatively high profile names getting the seat in the press box for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Also mentioned Tristan Jarry getting the start. To the broadsheet portion of the whiteboard, and we talked about this a little bit with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal on the crossover, but Frank Saravelli echoing a similar thought on his hit with Halford and Brough this morning on the station, saying, yeah, we always know the Canucks are out there. They're making calls. They're testing the market. They're interested in what's going on, but they kind of want to see what this whole roster looks like together before they start making moves, before they start committing assets to trades. And of course, a big part of that is Thatcher Demko. Seems like there's a pretty good chance, if not on this road trip, first game back, which I think is what, December 6th? So, you know, just 10 days, 9 days from now against Columbus. That would seem like, unless there's a setback, the kind of far out scenario for Thatcher Demko to return to the lineup. And then the other variable there is JT Miller, right? And we don't know when he's going to be back, obviously, for very obvious, understandable reasons. We're not going to get a lot of details on that. But I guess the question is, because it's one thing to have those players back, right? But then it's another thing of, okay, how are they all performing? And so I guess the question for me is, even if you get, you know, a stretch of a week, 10 days, with all of JT Miller, Brock Besser, Thatcher Demko back in the lineup, Dakota Joshua still in the lineup now, there's going to be a ramp-up period for those players. And also, how much information do you need to glean? How much of a sample size do you need to see with the healthy roster before you really get comfortable making some trades and deciding, okay, and diagnosing what the trouble spots on your team are? And like, is it going to change that much? I mean, isn't it still the blue line? They're not waiting for any defenders other than Derek Forbort. So I don't know if Thatcher Demko or JT Miller coming back is really going to change the view of where this team needs help anyways.
Yeah, I think there's a lot going on. I think the club, you know, I reported on what, Friday of last week, the Canucks feel stuck in between on the back end, and that's shaping their thinking about it. The Canucks have been concerned, although the last week might help a little bit, about their club's inability to string together games in which the team plays the right way based on their own internal standard, right? Like, this has been the dynamic that the club is monitoring. The fact that they're not rushing to do, you know, their answer to, like, we are getting late in the month, which would make this the first month in Alvin and Rutherford's, or the first season in Alvin and Rutherford's tenure in which they didn't trade for a defensive help, both in December
or in October, or October and November.
Right? Like, yeah. They literally have completed two early season reinforce the defense trades every season of their tenure.
We got three days left.
They got 3 days to do it again. So I do think that's meaningful, right? This is a team that's always scrambling to upgrade their blue line. And if they decide this year not to do it now, I think that's going to tell you a lot about where they think the team is at and whether or not they think this is the year to go for it. Whether or not they're seeing the right things early on enough. Now, you know, and they might be seeing the right things by January, right? But are they going to keep pushing chips into the middle of the table in support of this group if they're not seeing it? And if they're beginning to look at how their prospects are trending and how Karamaki is trending and how Volander is trending and starting to think, hey, like, you know, we're going to have a fair bit of cap space this summer. We're going to have an above average amount of dead space, but we're still going to have the flexibility if we want to retain Besser and Suter and add another piece. Plus, we've got a couple ELC guys we feel really strong about contending with next season. Is this a season to not keep your powder dry entirely, but to be a little bit more conservative than the all-in posture that the club had last season and frankly, at times the year before, too?
And almost set yourself up for the following season, yeah. Right? Now, They're a long ways from making that decision. It's my sense, right? Like, the team can change the calculus in a pretty straightforward manner.
But last year you were selling Pettersson, right? Like, last year you were frying different types of fish. You were rebuilding, you know, the confidence of the marketplace, right? Now you've done that.
Yeah.
to a large extent. Pedersen's locked up. You have a lot more long-term certainty with your core. Does that give the team flexibility to think a little bit more long-term? That's not what I'm reporting. I'm just reporting that the team feels in between on the back end.
On the blue
and
line.
On the back end and is thinking a little bit differently about balancing the future and the past. But reading between the lines of some of what I'm hearing and some of what I'm thinking about myself, I do sort of wonder if there's at least a chance that the club looks at this and says, this year, not that it's not our year, but do we have to be a little bit more circumspect, a little more careful? If we make the big move, does it have to be a multi-year
move? Yes.
I think they may land in that sort of place versus, you know, the way that they spent assets on rental players, multiple rental players over the course of last season.
Yeah, the player with term would seem to be the thing that kind of squares the circle there, right? If that's available, and it's the problem is then the cost starts going so high, right? If it's a truly desirable player with term that's not outrageous, then you're talking about a monster package that you have to give back to get that player. And speaking of very expensive trades to complete, just one other note from Frank Saravelli on with Halford and Brough this morning. Canucks talked to Columbus about defensive prospect David Yurecek, but we're not seriously in on him. It's of like Columbus's price. No surprise here, right? This is a guy who was six overall pick just a couple of years ago, 6'4" right shot defenseman. That's always going to demand a very high price. Doesn't sound like the Canucks had what Columbus was looking for there.
I do want to note, you know, on the question of like, should the Canucks consider trading one of their top prospects for David Yurecek? I prefer David Yurecek to their top prospects. So personally, I would strongly consider that, but you know, endowment effect is strong for all NHL teams. The Canucks are very high on Vilander and Lekkerimäki. I am too. I think Yurecek has a chance to be special in sort of a different way. Just physical tools and offensive skill set, I think, is higher, even though Vilander's skating skill is through the roof and Yurecek's is a little more suspect.
Lineup notes, no official lineup information on the second half of a road back-to-back here. You would expect, certainly, to see Artur Shelov's in net in Pittsburgh, and we'll see if he can build on, you know, at least a couple of better performances. I know the stats in the Rangers one weren't sparkling, but it looked like a continuation of some progress for Shelov. So we'll see if he can get another win under his belt in the NHL. And then I guess the other question is, are there any other lineup changes? Does Max Sasson get back into the lineup? And it wasn't just Nils Höglander who was, you know, right around 7 minutes, right? Arshdeep Bains, 7 minutes and 10 seconds in the game last night. If you're looking for some fresh legs in the second half of a back-to-back, some speed, Tocchet obviously really liked what Max Sasson brought to the lineup in Ottawa. So I wonder if there's an opportunity for him to get back in and play his second NHL game tonight in Pittsburgh as well. Playoff and standings update courtesy of Dom's Model. The Canucks still right where they've kind of settled into, with a 94% chance to make the playoffs per the model, and still sitting at that 103 season-ending point projection. Oilers at 105. Vegas Golden Knights are at 102. So per the model, a pretty tight three-way race at the top of the Pacific Division.
Canucks, narrow favorites in Pittsburgh. This is the gambling update, of course. Minus 120 on the money line, Penguins plus 100. So that reflects the back-to-back more than it does any respect for the Pittsburgh Penguins from the betting markets. Here's the interesting one to me, Jamie. Artur Shelov's a net for the Canucks. Over-under is set at 6.5, which is high, but with steam on the under, minus 120, you can get the over at plus 100. That appeals to me given
Tristan Jarry and Artur Shelov's?
Given Jarry and Shelov's, given how the Penguins defend.
Yep.
Right? All of that would make me, if I was someone who actually gambled on hockey, stare long and hard at that plus 100.
This is our last show together this week. Boy, we went out with a bang.
It was a great show.
What a show.
I
have a bone to pick before you guys wrap up.
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You can pick a bone. Just give me a sec. I just want Jamie to know the fact that we are not doing shows together tomorrow and Friday does not have me doing cartwheels.
All right.
All right, Dom. The stage is yours to pick a bone.
This is on hold music.
Yes, very much so.
That is nowhere close to what I was playing.
That is on hold music. All right, ready?
You've made your point.
Sorry. Let me keep it up. Keep it going.
Sorry, you need to wait 10 to 15 minutes for the next available representative.
No, no, no. I'm going to... Sorry, sir. We'll never deliver your couch. Stop calling. We're not going to help you.
Sir, I've had some pretty similar conversations to that.
In 30 minutes, a customer service representative will maybe rudely answer your call, at which point they will definitely not help you retrieve your couch from a warehouse in Richmond.
I definitely wrote in an email to a Purolator service agent, like, would it be faster if I came and picked it up, and fully recognizing, like, their job is to deliver it to me. Why am I suggesting to go pick it up? But, like, there has to be a solution to this. There has to be.
Excuse me, sir. Abandon all hope. All who enter here.
No, I'm going to be sitting on my horrible current couch forever, apparently.
It's not the worst idea, Jamie. I live 10 minutes from a FedEx shipping center, and I got so fed up, I just went and picked it up myself.
I'm on it. You just showed up unannounced?
Yeah, if you have your shipping label and you know it's there, you just say,
I'm tempted to do that, honestly. Just, like, go find it, knock on the door, and be like, hey, guys, let me look through the packages until I find mine. I'm going to take them home now. You guys clearly aren't doing it. Let me do it for you. Anyways, I'll be live at the Canucks Alumni Luncheon tomorrow downtown at the Hotel Vancouver, I believe. So look for some interviews with Canucks alumni on the show tomorrow. Drance has the day off. Then we both have the day off on Friday for the Canucks playing the Buffalo Sabres at noon. So we'll be back together on the show on Monday live from the Canucks Alumni Luncheon tomorrow. Enjoy the game tonight. Full game day coverage is coming up here next on Sportsnet 650.